Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi there, and welcome to Explaining History Podcast. Today, I'm going to be talking a bit about the Battle of Dien Bien Phu and its significance. It was the first time in which a guerrilla army formed itself into a conventional fighting force and managed to defeat a colonial power. And it was the titanic showdown between the Vietnamese Viet Minh National Liberation Force and the French colonial army in Vietnam, 1954. Ever since the end of the Second World War, the reintroduction of French colonial forces into Vietnam had been something that was hotly resisted by the National Liberation Forces that had fought the Japanese and had really formed themselves during the 1920s and 30s in Vietnam, originally as an organisation to press for greater autonomy within the French Empire, but after 1945, a movement for independence. Ho Chi Minh had been contacted and aided to some extent by the American Office for Strategic Services, the forerunner to the CIA, before the end of the Second World War. They had armed him in his struggle against the Japanese. And the US President Roosevelt, before he died, looked on quite favourably on the cause of Vietnamese independence, and certainly had no love for de Gaulle, who he presumed would become the next dictator of France. De Gaulle had a habit of rubbing Roosevelt up the wrong way in his extremely rude and abrasive manner, and did himself no favours. The idea that France's empire would be removed from her at the end of the war by the actions of the Americans, or even worse, in de Gaulle's mind, the British, whom he strongly suspected wished to replace a Francophone empire with an expanded Anglophone one. These were ideas that were abhorrent to him, and he was determined to fight for Vietnam. It just so happens that following the death of Roosevelt, the attitude towards de Gaulle softened, and the Americans were more than happy in the later 1940s to give the French moral and material assistance to regain Vietnam, not because they wished to see an expansion in the French Empire, but because they could see that decolonized nations such as Vietnam were going to become new front lines in the Cold War, a Cold War that had focused initially on Western Europe, but now new fields were, new frontiers, new fronts, if you will, were opening up in Asia and South America. The attempt to reassert control over Vietnam was ill-conceived to begin with. The Vietnamese had spent a large portion of the war since 1940 battling the Japanese. The humiliating loss of Vietnam from the French to the Japanese in 1940 really did puncture the myth of white Western European invulnerability. This was a myth, really, that had been on the decline since about 1905 with the destruction by the Japanese of the Russian fleet at Tsushima. The continued defeat of European powers in the Far East all the way up to 1942 by the Japanese gave a renewed sense of national self-determination to a great many Asian countries, from the Indonesia through to Malaya through to Vietnam, and a sense that really the time of white European colonisation in Asia was over. It just so happens that, if anything, Japanese colonization of these countries was far worse, far more brutal, rapacious, and far more based on slave labor and expropriation of land and territory and resources than that of the Europeans. The Japanese were under far tighter time pressures in their struggle for resources to finally defeat the Chinese that they had been at war with since 1937. And their kind of violent expansionist nationalism really did predispose itself to staggering acts of brutality. By August 1945, a Viet Minh government had been established in Hanoi. The Vietnamese emperor, Bao Dai, had been persuaded to abdicate by Ho Chi Minh, but was treated fairly and was not particularly the subject of any kind of state repression, and was kept on as an advisor. I think this is interesting to point at this juncture, to point out that much of what Ho Chi Minh does in 1945 is fairly moderate stuff. It's not really the rhetoric or the behaviour of an ardent Maoist guerrilla. Ho Chi Minh is a national liberation leader who has leanings towards communism. He's been a member of the Communist Party, one of the founder members of the French Communist Party in the 1920s. But the extent to which he was looking to initiate an orthodox Maoist or Stalinist program in Vietnam is quite doubtful. One piece of evidence is his decision to model the Vietnamese Declaration of Independence on that of the United States, with its kind of emphasis on individualism and that kind of thing. Part of this was an appeal to the United States to back the Viet Minh over the French, but it also was an attempt to express moderation within the new realities of the Cold War, and an attempt to give a signal to America that Ho Chi Minh at this juncture was not perhaps going to embrace Stalinism. Initially, a Franco-British force took control of Saigon and wrested it from the Japanese, who had by that point surrendered anyway. The reinvasion of Vietnam by European forces was part of was legitimised by the war. It was seen as part of the process of clearing out the Japanese, but the real motivation was recolonisation. In the north, Chiang Kai-shek, the generalissimo, the Chinese dictator, had occupied Hanoi, and under his auspices a North Vietnamese Republic is set up under the control of the Viet Minh. War quickly broke out between the southern occupied French colonial Vietnam and the new Viet Minh dominated north. The French military superiority, their use of naval power and air power, forced back the Viet Minh, forcing them out of Hanoi and forcing them to flee into the interior of the country, into the jungle and mountainous regions, which had been their strongholds during the guerrilla struggle against the Japanese anyway. France's failure to break the Viet Minh as a guerrilla force is emphasised by 1949, where they offered the new state of Vietnam an associated role within the French Empire under Bao Dai. The Viet Minh were not to be part of this new government, and they angrily attacked the new government of Bao Dai, claiming it to be a kind of an impotent puppet regime of the French. 1949 is, of course, a fatal year for Vietnam, not because of what happens within her borders, but because of what happens to the north. In China, China falls to the communists under Mao Zedong, and this is brings about an immense crisis within the US State Department and within America itself. It's another vast chunk of humanity is fallen to communism, and the influence of McCarthyism during this period spikes. The Red Scares and the obsession with red traitors within America explodes into American national consciousness as a means of explaining this catastrophe. America had seen itself as the mentor to China, who the model that China would follow, and the loss of China to communism could only have been caused in the minds of America by red treachery somewhere. And so all of a sudden the priorities of the US State Department and the Department of Defense and a range of other agencies shift towards establishing anti-communist governments around the world. All of a sudden the struggle against national liberation movements like the Viet Minh suddenly becomes very clouded with anti-communist rhetoric, and it doesn't cease to be for many decades. The anti-communist worldview really kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Any hope that the Vietnamese had that they may find patrons in America dwindles by 1949, and a much more likely patron develops in the guise of China and Russia. The Americans had always been distinctly uncomfortable with the prospect of land reform in Vietnam, which sounded distinctly communist in tone. The fact of the matter being, however, that it would have been impossible to galvanise the Vietnamese peasantry into a national liberation movement without offering them the one thing that really, really was most attractive, which was the breakup of the large colonial estates that had been acquired either by ethnic French Catholic landowners or Vietnamese converts to Catholicism. By 1950, General Giap, the chief of the operations of the North Vietnamese Army, is managing to prosecute very effective raids against the French and very effective offences, particularly in October 1950 with the catastrophic loss of the garrison at Lang Son, where in which nearly 5,000 French troops were lost, along with huge amounts of material and another 2,000 French troops wounded. Now, this was a success that was worthy in the eyes of Stalin and Mao, of their backing and patronage. There was no way in the early Cold War environment that either were going to back a losing horse, irrespective of its kind of ideological stripes. Now the North Vietnamese were capable of showing their ardour and their ability to really fight the powers of colonialism. And the in the eyes of Moscow, particularly, being able to bog down the new opponents in the West, the French, maybe hopefully the British, in a long colonial war, would be an excellent way of sapping the new military alliances that appeared to be forming against the Soviet Union. So this was welcome news to Stalin, who was also offering his patronage to the North Koreans to launch their war against the South. Stalin saw immense opportunities in Southeast Asia, and he also looked with great suspicion at new communist China. Throughout the war, he preferred to give his blessing and any assistance and equipment that he could spare to Chiang Kai-shek, and was less keen on backing Mao, even though both were part of the complementary ideology, both were communists. He did not really like the prospect of a rival for his position as the leader of the communist world, and he knew Mao could certainly offer that. And he also had certain doctrinal differences with Mao. Mao was far more keen on pursuing a peasant revolution, whereas Stalin was sure as
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
had Lenin been before him, that the workers were the future, and the peasants were really a kind of a reactionary hangover from the Middle Ages. Throughout 1951 and 1952, the Viet Minh and the French both inflicted bloody defeats on one another, and by late 1952, the position was a kind of a rather uneasy stalemate, where neither side knew quite how to break the deadlock. It was at this point that the French decided to adopt what is referred to as the hedgehog tactic, which worked initially but would prove to be a catastrophe at Dien Bien Phu. The hedgehog tactic was the airdrop of thousands of men and equipment deep behind enemy lines to create a fortified base, the point of which was to defeat guerrilla warfare, a fortified stronghold within enemy territory would force the Viet Minh to come out from their guerrilla attacks and to attack head-on. And the French had proven before that when guerrilla armies were forced to fight head-on, that they were very vulnerable. They lost their natural edge that they had through guerrilla fighting. So the first few attempts at hedgehog tactics were successful, but that caused the French to overextend themselves at Dien Bien Phu. By 1953, the commander of French forces, General Navarre, was well aware that there was no possibility of success in Vietnam, largely because even if the Viet Minh were beat on the battlefield, the general population was still determinedly anti-French and anti-colonial, and there was really no way of undoing that. The General Giap decided to try to outmaneuver the French by invading Laos, one of the neighbouring countries which was at that point a French ally. And so Dien Bien Phu, which was just 10 miles from the Laos border, was seen as the natural place for a French hedgehog to be established. The other advantage of seizing Dien Bien Phu is that there was an airstrip there which had been established by the Japanese during the war. For the French, there were long-term political and structural problems with their military operations in Vietnam, in Indochina in general, in that not only was the war becoming increasingly unpopular back home, and the general public were finding it increasingly difficult to see what bearing Indochina had on their lives and why they should be sacrificing so much so soon after the end of the last war. But also, the fact of the matter was that successive French commanders in Indochina, up to about 1952, had instituted no long-term strategy, had no vision for the defeat of the Viet Minh, and were simply hoping for the opportunity to leave Indochina without having had a major defeat inflicted on them. These were really second-rate military men, many of whom who were the only options, given the loss of so many really first-rate commanders during the war. And when General Henri Navarre was sent by the French Premier Meyer to take over operations in Vietnam, he was unaware of the extent to which there had just been this ongoing sense of drift and inaction and inertia that had mounted up over the years, leaving some colossal problems for him to inherit. By 1952, perhaps because of these weaknesses, the situation militarily was already verging on lost. This perhaps explains why Navarre went to such lengths at Dien Bien Phu and took such extraordinary gambles. The operation was to parachute French soldiers into a 12-kilometre-long valley at Dien Bien Phu, a tactically very weak place to occupy, given the hilltops and mountaintops surrounding it that the French would eventually find out about. If the French could occupy Dien Bien Phu and draw in a massed attack from the Viet Minh, then it would be the lure they needed to destroy a bulk of their forces in the region, and thus ease pressure on neighbouring Lao, which was becoming part of the sphere of influence of the Viet Minh at that point, particularly the Plain of Jars, through which many of the Viet Minh's supply trails, which would later be part of the Ho Chi Minh Trail, were situated. General Giap of the Viet Minh would learn the lessons of previous hedgehog encounters, and instead of flinging his forces in a full-on assault at Dien Bien Phu, he would wage a war of attrition. He viewed Dien Bien Phu, the valley, almost like a rice bowl, with his men at the edges of the bowl and the French in the centre, in the dip. And by wearing down the French at the periphery, he could then use artillery to destroy the French in the centre. Ironically, by the time the operation began, the French government had already decided that Navarre's remit did not extend to protecting Lao. Navarre had a number of options when it came to defeating the Viet Minh in Lao. The order that was sent only reached him by December the 4th, by which time the operation had begun. All the other options he had were seen as very weak or unworkable in the extreme. The option of the hedgehog of Dien Bien Phu, also by Navarre, was seen as fairly mediocre, was his term. There was a distinct difference of opinion between his senior officers and him as to how to go about defeating the Viet Minh, whether to create an impregnable fortress and draw them into battle, or to launch raids from a lightly defended fortress at Dien Bien Phu. The Navarre seemed to be completely isolated through disagreements with his other chiefs of staff, all of whom believed in the light raid strategy, and he was the only man to champion the impregnable fortress approach. And this was partly based around a gross underestimation of Viet Minh forces, and particularly of Viet Minh artillery. When the battle began, the Viet Minh actually had four times as many heavy guns as Navarre had predicted. During the establishment of the garrison at Dien Bien Phu, the French dropped 9,000 paratroopers onto a small Viet Minh garrison at the airstrip. They dropped a bulldozer as well to rebuild the airstrip. And they destroyed Viet Minh forces in pitched battles over the next couple of days. By the time the outpost was at full strength, 16,000 men plus armour were there. However, they were in the middle of a densely forested part of North Vietnam where there was an unsecured perimeter surrounding them, a recipe for disaster. Against this force would be thrown five divisions or 50,000 Viet Minh soldiers. Once these forces had fully surrounded Dien Bien Phu, the battle commenced on the 13th of March 1954, which would last for 57 days and would be known by the combatants on the French side as 57 Days of Hell. And it began with frighteningly skillful artillery bombardment from the Vietnamese. The French had underestimated not only the number of Vietnamese guns, but also the skill of Vietnamese gunnery. The Vietnamese had been given some expert advice from the Chinese in how to target and how to camouflage and hide artillery positions. The first casualty of the first major casualty of this bombardment was the airstrip, which was destroyed and put out of action for the rest of the battle, thus really condemning the garrison. The French could rely on bombers and fighter support from far away, from airstrips to the south, but at the site they were constantly in a rearguard position. Their attempts to take back territory lost to the North Vietnamese were piecemeal and sporadic, and their supplies gradually dwindled, so that as they ran out of equipment and food, so morale slumped, and by May the exhausted and half-starving defenders realised that all was lost. On May the 8th, 1954, some 11,721 men surrendered to the Viet Minh. It was a catastrophic moment for France. It was the symbolic end to France's hopes, realistically, of holding on to North Vietnam, to holding on to Indochina whatsoever. The military defeat in North Vietnam had led to a collapse in civilian morale back home and an absolute refusal in France for the conflict to go on any longer. The defeat had led to the loss of one in every 10 French soldiers based in Indochina. So that was the scale of the disaster. It was a miniature Stalingrad. On the same day, peace talks began in Geneva. One of the first acts of the talks was to partition the country into two, into a north and southern part. Elections would be held in 1956, according to the treaty. The Communist Republic of North Vietnam and the French-backed South Vietnam would hopefully dissolve themselves and become one Vietnam under an elected government. France's role in the following 2 years in the south of Vietnam gradually dwindles and is replaced by an ever more robust American presence. The Americans are sure that they are now fully engaged in the attempt to stop a communist takeover and veto any elections taking place in 1956, claiming that Ho Chi Minh was engaged in all manner of dirty tricks, but the reality being, as they were fully aware, that had the elections been held, Ho Chi Minh would easily have won them on both sides of the dividing line. France's failure in Vietnam and the disaster at Dien Bien Phu were really the prelude to a wider series of post-colonial traumas for France, because the weakness in Southeast Asia was observed in North Africa, in France's colonies of Morocco, Algeria and Tunisia, all of which struggled for independence. Within 6 months of Dien Bien Phu, war had broken out in Algeria and would prove to be the French's most long-running and bloodiest post-colonial conflict. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. That's been the Explaining History podcast for today. Exciting news coming up. Explaining History's own intrepid roving reporter, Ahmed Massoud, is currently somewhere between Normandy and Stalingrad, or Volgograd, as we should call it today. Mr. Putin hasn't renamed it just yet. Is somewhere in Europe, checking out the battlefields of World War I and World War II, and has promised during his guest editing residency of the website in the next few weeks to come back with some exciting and engaging reportage from the scenes of the last two world wars. Anyway, thanks very much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next podcast. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.